I'll actually now introduce myself. I'm Darren. I am an alcoholic, and I'm a member of the There Is a Solution Big Book Study Group in Kingswood in Sydney. And now I will move on, and the third reading for today is page 76 of the Big Book. When ready, we say something like this: "My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me the strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen." I'll now introduce Sam G. And towards the end of his 15 minutes, Damien will open the chat box up again. So if you can put your questions in there for the panel, that would be great. Thanks.
Sam's on
everybody,
YouTube.
I'm Sam. I'm an alcoholic. Can you guys hear me? Everybody?
You're muted.
Hey, how are you? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, hey everybody, my name is Sam. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety's date is December 5th of 1999. My home group is the Backroom Group in Nashville, Tennessee. We meet on Saturday and Sunday at 10:30 in the morning. We also have a 9 a.m. Big Book Study. I have a sponsor. I sponsor other men. Thank you to everybody who invited us to speak. Thank you, David. Thank you, Erica. What a great lead. And truth be told, I mean, this is weird. The Zoom thing is just not really the cool thing about Zoom is that we all get to see each other and spend some time, you know, and see people from all over the country really quickly. But the Zoom thing's kind of weird. Speaking, I still haven't gotten used to the whole speaking in the Zoom. But, you know, one of the things that that I've got going for me is, you know, in the U.S., it's like, you know, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock. So I'm like a late night evangelist tonight, you know. So if there's anybody, all the people who are here are my crowd. You know, this is the home of the late night TV touchers. You know what I'm saying? We're here to put some heat on you tonight. And I can't hear anybody laugh to that either. So it probably wasn't funny. But anyway, so. You know, I think when I first got sober, I was 18 years old, and I had, been to two rehabs, three mental institutions, and I had a baby and I was married and I was dropped out of school. And my whole life I had spent getting kicked out of school and getting in trouble. And, you know, getting kicked out of stuff, and I never knew how to behave. And, you know, I was so beat up, because I felt like there's so much, I mean, I come from a long line of alcoholism. But my parents are alcoholics. My grandparents are alcoholics. I grew up in AA. I've loved alcohol. Like it was the nectar of the gods since I was, you know, 10 years old. I was, a kid who, manifested a lot of what the traits are, exaggerated traits of what we look for in untreated alcoholism. You know, I was, very insecure, but yet very vain. I lived with a lot of self-centered fear. And I often walked and played a character. You know, I went to an AA meeting and I heard a guy speak, and I had been going to AA meetings and been going to treatment centers and had been, places. And I think AA was just something that you went to when you were like in rehab school. I was in rehab school and I'd been in between treatment centers and I was just always screwing up. And I heard a man share, and I was so tired of hearing the God thing. You know, the sad thing was for me is that I had been a TV toucher. You know, I'm one of those guys that, you know, I had eaten acid and done a course in miracles. I had been baptized. I'd been prayed over in tongues while I was high on amphetamines. You know, I've had all kind of crazy experiences, and I was always hoping for like an exorcism or something, something to get me out of myself. And it's really hard to live life with just like that alcoholic helmet strapped on your head all the time. You know, I don't know how many people can relate to that. But it's just, it's a hard way to live. And I heard this guy say, I wondered if, you know, God was just a psychological crutch that, that weak people used, or he was somebody that, or a being that wouldn't want to intervene in any way in my life because I'd already broken so many promises and, you know, and I, you know, I'd been saved a bunch and I'd done all kind of stuff. You know, I come from the South in the U.S. and, you know, we go to a lot of church functions and, I had this idea. The guy said, if you have a problem with your God, you can borrow mine. It works for me. And he began this talk. And I asked that guy to sponsor me, and he said, you know, your problem is not alcohol, your problem is you. Alcohol is your medicine. And when you find, when we treat you, when we work through the steps together, when I coach you through the steps, if you do what I say, you'll have a spiritual awakening and the obsession to drink will leave. And that was true. I was so willing to do whatever this guy told me to do because for some reason, I thought there's two real things I got going on here. A is I am, you know, should have been weeded out by natural selection. There's some kind of genetic problem with me, my parents and family, and all these people. My parents have been sober for, you know, both over 30 years in AA. We're divorced for 9 and we're remarried for and close to 25. Very beautiful people. But, you know, I'd come from a long line of people who are alcoholics. And I thought, you know, if I probably should have been weeded out of the gene pool if it weren't for the modern of medical science, you know. And I thought, if this doesn't work, I'm just going to off myself because I don't want to hurt my kid. I don't want to hurt anybody else. And something worse for me, being a drunk alcoholic, is being a dry alcoholic. I mean, just being restless, irritable, and discontent. I mean, at least when I've got alcohol in me, I'm anesthetized. And we started working through the steps, and it really started cleaning me out. And I really started to get, you know, my soul started to wake up, and I started to hear music better. I started to see things better. My perception felt clean. I was still, you know, had a long way to go. But one of the really interesting parts of it was that this guy, you know, he was 65 years old probably, and I was 18, and he'd show up for me every week and just, you know, he would be patient with me and we work through these steps. And one of the thoughts I had, he started giving me all these speaker tapes. And one of the most beautiful things I think about thoughts is that, you know, this is not a place where we go to show off. It's kind of the craziest thing. It's where everybody goes to pop their hood, you know, I mean, and get a look at what's really going on with them and their relation to the steps. I mean, you see guys who've been sober 30 years, you know, get honest at the podium about stuff, cry, and everybody loves them. I mean, it really is a family. I mean, nobody wants to hear about how cool you are, how good you are. You know, we want to hear about, you know, how you fumbled it up and, you know, all that. So, and made it through it. And one of the perceptions I had is that, you know, 6 and 7 were like an exorcism or something. You know, like you would go through the steps, you'd work the 4 and 5 and you go to your sponsor and all of a sudden, you know, now these are about to be cast out, you know, ready to have all of our, everything that's wrong with us. And I got this idea that, you know, if you look behind a dark door, you could almost see like a welder sparkle going behind it, you know, and something electrical happening back there. And you come back out and all of a sudden I wear white linen and just kind of touch people on the head, you know, just kind of bless people. I also thought that people with 10 years of sobriety did that. I thought when you get 10 years of sobriety, you can wear white linen, get a tan, and bless people. I'm now 20 years sober. I haven't blessed anybody today. But I think one of the interesting things and I really like the reading that Erica read. I've heard that before. I really think that's really beautiful. But one of the things that I wanted, the element that I want to talk about is when we talk about God, we are now willing to have all of me, the good and the bad. And one of the things that one of the attributes to myself is I'm a hider. My dishonesty comes in the form of hiding. You know, and one of the things that really blocked me from God is I don't believe that God was ever not there. I think God's always been around us. It's completely egocentric to think that, you know, God just happened to stay away from my side of the block because, you know, I had a bad attitude. I think that my perception that I was unable to be consciously aware of the presence of God. And one of the things that I feel like was blocking me is this idea of a lot of the guilt that I had. I had a lot of guilt, a lot of shame, a lot of things that I was hiding. And when we come to the, and I had a lot of false beliefs, you know, there's a lot of people that in the program that taught me about principles in the fourth step, you know, where we talk about having these self-defeating belief systems or just wrong belief systems that we put through the process as well. These axioms that if you really knew me, you wouldn't love me, or, you know, I'll never be enough or stuff like that. And I look at, I'm only as good as my ability to make money or whatever it is. And I look at these belief systems that have been guiding me and messing me up and causing me to make these messes. This is where Don Pritz used to say that the seventh step was like the third step with teeth in it. So this is where I get all my chips. And we've talked about it. You know, a lot of the inventories that I've done, you know, I work inventory every year or two. I go through the steps continually, and I do 10, 11, and 12. I pray, meditate. You know, I definitely believe that when prayer, meditation, and self-examination are logically related and interwoven, they do become an unshakable foundation for life. That's truth for me. But one of the things that we come to, and I think we're at a beautiful weekend to be talking about this, but one of the things we do is we come to God and say, here's all the stuff I've been hiding, and let me go all in. This is who I am. This is where this is not where I learn how to control and modify my behavior with God's help. This is where I come and I say, God, I am so tired of me. I've just talked to another human being. I've opened my heart up. I've talked to you about this. And I want you to have all of them, the good and the bad. I'm tired of running. I'm tired of fighting. I'm tired of being my own line of defense. And I'm tired of my defense mechanisms. And one of the things that I really experience when we do that, when we familiarize, when we tell the whole truth, and we put all our chips in on either God is everything or else he is nothing, before we go to make these amends, I feel like, you know, this is where we come to our Father and God, you know, shows us that he loves us. We cannot earn the love of God. It's already there. And I believe, you know, in my belief system, and this weekend, this is a lot about what this is about. You know, it's where we come to, you know, give our ego some death and resurrect in God. You know, this is where we talk about resurrection in the spirit. This is where we talk about the miracles that God can give us when we turn our whole selves over to him. And it's funny how when we go into the 10th step and they talk about the 10th step promises, it talks about us being in a position of neutrality. It talks about us not having to fight anything or anyone, including our character. I don't feel like I have to fight my character defects. Some of them are just there. They've been there for 20 freaking years. They're obnoxious. I've said lots of prayers about them, and I've tried to do some stuff about them, and some of them are just me. You know, like, I don't believe that I go into AA and I get spit out like Jesus after a year. You know, that's just not what happens. What I believe is I start to grow along spiritual lines, and I really try. I get in the game. I do 10, 11, and 12, and I try to be as close to my Creator as I can be. My main purpose is not to look good. My main purpose is to be useful to other people. And one of my problems is I've always wanted to look good and get approval for my own self, for my own value, you know? And so I've worked and worked and worked the steps many times, and there's been many chapters in my life where I've had to lay down. There's things that I have to lay down in step seven. You know, there's stuff that I have to lay down. Like, I'm tired of trying to, you know, make, this is where I lay down my idols and lay down my toys. This is where, you know, you can make money your higher power. Still, you can make money. You can think about money all day long and build money as your security. You can make my security. And then, you know, there's been so many times where the ego has crept back in. Harry Tebow, Bill Wilson's psychiatrist, and this is what I've heard that he said, but I think it's beautiful. He said the recuperative power of the alcoholic ego would be comic if it weren't so tragic. And, you know, that is my truth. It'll sneak in like carbon monoxide. I can be living in the spirit one day, and a few days later, I'm back to propulsing, trying to author my own life, to build my own security and get what I think I want that's going to make me feel secure and happy. And every year at some point, I come back to God and I say, now I can start it a little bit with the prayer and meditation and the self-examination. I don't have to wait so long, but I can come and say, you know, God, I made a mess with this. Here's all of it. Here's this whole plan. Chuck C's been mentioned a few times tonight, and one of the things he used to say all the time is I can either be God-centered and suffer the consequences or self-centered and suffer the consequences. And this is where I go from being, this is where I go from saying, you know what? I'm afraid, God, that if I turn my heart and my will and my soul over to you, that you're either going to cause harm to me or not going to provide for me, or that you're not going to be real, or that you're going to, you know, or that it won't be any fun. That's a big scary one. You know, am I going to have to be some Puritan that lives out on an Amish farm? You know, I mean, like, am I going to have to renounce everything? Those are some of the kind of the childish fears that we have. And the longer that I've stayed in here, and the more I go all in, the more I realize that God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. He wants you to feel his love. He wants to be as close to every person, you know, as a father is to a child. And I think that is a great analogy for the spirit, you know, so for me, you know, my fiance and I were supposed to get married this weekend, and this whole thing, actually today, this whole deal that we had to shut it down and postpone it. And so we were both a little bummed about it. But I think, I got 1 minute to go. I'm really grateful for the opportunity to speak tonight. And, you know, I don't know if I just rambled. I mean, it's a little late tonight, and I did the best I could. I mean, who really knows about 6 and 7? You know, that's a tough one to talk about for 15 minutes. But, you know, I'll tell you that for me, it's about going all in with God. And my perception of God is that I have a God that has paid the penalty for me, that says you're not guilty. You know, I love you. And, you know, I believe in a God of love and grace. And I think this is where we put all we have, all our weapons, all our hopes, all our stuff. And we go, here, take all of me, the good and the bad, and make me what you want me to be. Make me useful to you. And when I get that way, when I am useful, that's the greatest feeling and the greatest state of being that I've ever been in. It's beyond any amount of money. It's beyond anything. I mean, it's right up there with just hugging one of your kids. When you're sitting there helping another alcoholic and you feel like you're useful, that's, you know, the gift that AA has given to me through this step. And with that, I'm done. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Sam. Sheree, did you want to unmute